We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Darius Miller.
This is Drew Hardy.
This is Lance Thomas, Tyree Gavin.
Jason Smith.
Anthony Davis of the New Orleans Pelicans.
You're listening to.
And you are listening to In the Know.
In the Know.
The Bourbon Street Shots.
Bourbon Street Shots podcast.
All Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to the show. We got to watch five losses in a row now, Michael McNamara. I don't know what to say. Too many injuries. This is just, I don't get it. What do we do?
I've got no consolation. I hope people aren't tuning into this podcast to hear something optimistic or hopeful, because I don't have much left. Sorry. And on that note, let's start off.
So all of you who turn in for happiness, you could just delete the podcast now. I mean, we're going to talk about Miami, Washington, and the two Dallas games, all of which were losses, and the parade of injuries continues. We're now talking about essentially Eric Gordon and Anthony Davis are the only players that were part of the finishing five. So it's last year again, isn't it? It's the same team as last year.
I don't know. I don't think they're that good. I mean, Robin Lopez took up space. At least at this point in the season, Jason Smith had been relatively healthy. You had a point guard who was going out there every night and putting up offensive numbers with terrible defense. Now we just have terrible offense and defense from our new point guard. So I don't think this team is nearly as good as the team we saw last year.
For a second, I thought you were going to stop there with Kuzmicki and say, man, we had a point guard that was going out there every night.
He was walking out there. No, but I mean,
Austin Rivers is better this year.
Okay.
A little.
Yeah, I mean, but no, I mean, last year's team did have a healthy Ryan Anderson. Most of the time, I definitely think this team that we've been putting on the court these last couple of games, last year's team is far better. I don't even know if it's close.
I think you're being a little harsh. I don't think it's far better. Anthony Davis is better this year than last year.
Yeah, but doesn't have guys who could get on the ball. I don't know. I think
it's pretty dire. And as we saw, it resulted in a bunch of losses that in every single game, Pelicans play fine for the first half, except for the last night's game against Dallas. They play well through the first half, and then the other team decides, all right, we're done messing around, and it's pretty much finished.
Right. So, I mean, to attack the first line of your your sentence there, your statement, do you feel like the Pelicans did play fine in the first half of this Miami game, or did you just know the entire time that Miami was going to squash them like a bug and, you know, they were effectively just playing around with them in the first half?
Oh, no. I mean, that was – if you read my game on preview, I basically said the Pelicans need to come out and punch them in the mouth while they're messing around, because they're going to be messing around. And if they can build up enough of a lead, then when the game actually becomes serious and Miami starts saying we're gonna really turn up the pressure, you might be able to last through, weather the storm. Of course, I expected there to be more people available for that game. Jrue Holiday ending up being out as well. I mean, so did you have a different feeling about that Miami game? I'm assuming you thought the same thing was going to happen. That in the fourth quarter, they were just basically going to turn it on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that is what I thought would happen. I thought Miami would turn it on in the fourth quarter, but they actually went a quarter early on the Pelicans just to blow them out the entire second half. But, yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it was something where people were excited, and New Orleans held the lead for the majority of the first half. But, I mean, they clearly weren't in the same stratosphere, and you saw the same odd things. I mean, you see no playing time whatsoever, even in a blowout for Austin Rivers. You only see about 20 and a half minutes of Tyreke Evans. I mean, the starting lineup, it just makes you throw up in your mouth with Aminu and Alexis Ajinka. It's just, I mean, it's a bad team, and I guess it's fun to watch first halves, or I guess in the last game it was an exciting second half, but I really don't know what to say. I feel like we were talking about a bad team that was building the last 2 years, and now I feel like we're back to talking about, honestly, a team that I don't know who they would be favored against.
Yeah.
I think maybe two or three teams at home. Other than that, I can argue they're the worst, second worst team in the NBA right now.
With the starting lineup, absolutely. I will say, I mean, I honestly thought that our podcast this weekend was shaping up to be my, why did we say nice things about Jrue Holiday? Because as soon as we did, he falls apart on us. Except I thought it was that his play was just turning bad. I mean, was this the second or the third game in a row where, you know, he had put up single digits in scoring? Do you believe that it was the injured tibia that was causing his poor play? Or do you think he just had some off nights and then he also happened to injure his tibia?
No, I really just think that there's a lack of clarity on the roles. And especially, I mean, to me it was so clear that when Eric Gordon went out, Jrue Holiday knew that he had to be a scorer again, and that role came so naturally to him because he's more of an off guard than a point guard, in my opinion, offensively. And it came so naturally to him. And even in this Heat game, the one time you saw a flash of the old Jrue Holiday, Miami goes down and scores, and off a make, Jrue Holiday just takes the inbound pass, races up the floor 94 feet, and basically gets a layup swooping in from the left side after he blew by two defenders. I mean, it's just he's not playing naturally at all. He's playing this role in which he has to try to run a team when Eric Gordon is on the court, and when, you know, he's trying to set up others, and, you know, he's doing that with a lineup of just terrible players in which the defense doesn't respect two of the five guys on the court at all. You could just tell that he's just not in the role that he needs to be offensively, especially when he's playing with Eric Gordon. And I'm not trying to blame it on Eric Gordon. It's just the roles aren't clear. Monty's trying to make him an extension of a coach on the court, and that's just not, you know, where he succeeds. It wasn't a coincidence that when Gordon went down, Holiday took off, and now Gordon is back. The roles have changed yet again. And all of a sudden, Jrue Holiday just appears flustered on the offensive side.
Okay. I'm not sure I buy it. I have more of a feeling that the poor games we saw, the trio of bad games, was him because he talked about how the injury was getting worse, and finally they decided they needed to stop and take a look at it. And that's when they realized, you know, after they had an X-ray and a MRI, that it was fractured. I agree with you that they're very duplicative, Holiday and Gordon. I don't want to get into another Eric Gordon needs to go thing. There are better matches for Drew Holiday on the floor than Eric Gordon.
Yeah, it's not even Eric Gordon at fault. I mean, Drew Holiday goes down, and all of a sudden, Eric Gordon's way more aggressive.
Right.
And I'm not sitting here saying it's either guy's fault. I think you trade Gordon for numerous reasons. I'm just saying, you know, as much as tried to go against the tide this summer of all the quote-unquote experts pretty much saying this and us wanting to be optimistic and disagree and they can work together and yada, yada, yada. I mean, it basically has been coming true in a lot of ways that we just see that those guys are taking the ball out of each other's hands and making the other guy less effective as much as they are helping the team. So I'm not trying to blame it on Gordon. I just, you see it when one's out, the other one is so much more aggressive and looks like the player that, you know, earned a max contract or was an all-star in the East. But when they're together, they just look so passive.
Yeah. I will say, though, I mean, I'm so depressed about the fact that we haven't been able to see the Big Five play together on the floor at all. We got a couple games worth of a solid rotation with those five guys, and now we've got these injuries that are preventing them from playing together again. I mean, you just go look at the stats on NBA's media tool, and, you know, 91 minutes of time together, so, you know, not even two full games worth of minutes. But during those minutes, they were outscoring opposition by 9 points every 48 minutes. I mean, that's a dynamic group of guys. You can play them. There's so many different ways to attack. I just so wish we would be able to see it. I just wonder if we're ever going to be able to see it. At some point, there's going to be a move somewhere, I'm betting, and I would have kind of liked to see how those five guys, how this team would work with five guys rolling. But do you think that the Pelicans management is going to be patient enough to wait for everybody to heal up, come back together, and then see how they work together? Or do you think they're going to feel pressure to make some sort of move to stay at least in the hunt?
Man, I hope not. I mean, if I'm the general manager, and I don't know if he would get the approval on this from the owner, but I would go the exact opposite way. I mean, if I could trade Gordon for an expiring contract right now, I'd do it now more than ever. I mean, not to get too doom and gloom, but I don't think anybody could possibly think anything other than the season is lost as far as trying to make any kind of a playoff push. So, I would prefer it to see the other way where, you know, Ryan Anderson gets the surgery, he's out for the year, Eric Gordon gets traded for an expiring, and maybe Drew Holiday comes back after the All-Star break. But, you know, even a team with Holiday on it is not winning many games. You let the cards fall where they may, and maybe you get to keep your pick, even, you know, probably not, but at least, you know, there's some kind of chance. But either way, you just try it again next year with the core four and then $15 million in free agency to try to put some better fitting pieces around them. I really hope they don't go the other way and try to salvage this season, because I think without Ryan Anderson, it's unsalvageable.
Okay. So if it's unsalvageable without Ryan Anderson, when people talk about doing stuff like moving, I mean, here, I'm trying to figure out how do we get to the point where we don't have to rely on Ryan Anderson for so much of our offensive ability. And this team, it's night and day with and without him. So how can this team change so that's not the case? Like, what kind of player do they need to bring in? I mean, they have Morrow. He's a stretch guy, but this team stinks when he's in, even offensively. I mean, what do they need to have? Do you have any thoughts?
I mean, yeah, you need to have real players at the two and three. I mean, not superstars, but I mean, first of all, Morrow has been terrible offensively the past month or so. I mean, I see a guy that's lost all of his confidence. So when people say, you know, put him in order to provide another shooter on the court, I would honestly, if I had an open three-pointer right now, I would rather Austin Rivers take it than Anthony Morrow. The way that the two of them have played in the last month, I would have far more confidence that Austin Rivers makes that shot. So I don't think Morrow is this player that could stretch defenses the way people like to think he can. And, I mean, you just got to get a guy or two there, not even great, but that just provides – you know, something that the defense has to respect. I mean, we play Dallas in these past two games, and they have Jose Calderon on Al-Farouq Aminu. They just hide. I mean, teams just hide their absolute worst defenders on our wings, specifically Aminu, and all of a sudden they could pack the paint and hide their worst defenders so you can't attack them as much as you want to. It's just... it's something where you don't need superstars out there. You don't need to spend $10, $15 million on a two and on a three, but you need to have guys out there that other teams respect. Because right now, whenever I watch a Pelicans game, I see minimum of 3 to 4 defensive players in the paint when we're on offense, and a lot of times 5. And there's teams out there that don't have the greatest shooters in the world, but have spacing just because teams have to at least somewhat respect, you know, their perimeter guys.
Okay. And then I'm going to ambush you with this. After watching this game, this popped in my head. They played about the same number of minutes. So just say that you accept the theory that Jeff Withey isn't ready this year, that, you know, if you put him out there, his confidence will be crushed. Whatever. Withey's not really an option for you. You are going to have to play Ajinka or Steemsma 15 to 20 minutes every game, no matter what. And this game is for your life.
Oh, my God.
Which of those two guys are you going with? You have no idea what team you're going up against.
Like... first of all, I want to step inside the person. I mean, you never think when you're, you know, a young kid in elementary or middle school that one day your life is going to depend on Alex Ajinka or Greg Steenstra. But that's the scenario that I am in right now in this situation you set up. You know, your teachers don't tell you that. I guess I would, man. I think I would take Steemsma only because Ajinka is such an incredibly I mean he's a foul machine. He's just
it's amazing, isn't it?
It's unbelievable. Like, he picks them up anywhere, 94 feet from the basket, you know, stepping out on and contesting shoot. I mean, he's just automatic fouls, and I just I guess if I want another team to beat me, I want them to beat me by making shots, not making free throws. So I guess I would choose Steemsma, but the fact that like in this Miami game, those two guys get about 29 minutes combined. I mean, yeah, you could say this team shouldn't rely so much on Ryan Anderson, but, you know, maybe they don't have to if they have some kind of serviceable backups. I mean, maybe you could get by, but these are the guys that we're talking about that we're replacing Ryan Anderson with. I mean, if you step down, if any team steps down from the guy who's an 80-85 to somebody who's a 20-25, it's going to be hard for any team to win. So I agree, you don't want to be so reliant on Ryan Anderson, and I hope they're not moving forward, but no team should be playing either of these guys.
Yeah. Ajinka is, if he played 36 minutes, so this isn't even like a per 48 number. This is, if he played like regular starters minutes, he'd have 7.8 fouls per game.
He's still going to be fouled out of a summer league game.
It's true. He'd be able to stick in the summer league. Oh, that Dallas game, when there's two plays where Dirk was just, he's just walking along the edge, and Ajinka reaches out and grabs him. If you don't have the foot speed to keep up with Dirk Nowitzki without grabbing him, you have no business being anywhere near an NBA court. Come on.
So
Dirk Nowitzki doesn't run.
So, I mean, but let me ask you this. I mean, you talked about the issue of Ryan Anderson and being too dependent. I mean, we see multiple games now, just in this past week, where the Pelicans shoot in the single digits, 3-pointers.
Yes. Yes.
Like, I think I saw a stat from one of the Bird Rights writers that I follow on Twitter where, you know, there's only been a handful of games, maybe 10 games where a team has shot 10 or less, you know, 3-point attempts, and the Pelicans have like 4 of those games and 2. And I mean, it's getting ridiculous. How much of this do you think is a Monty Williams thing as far as the scheme? And then how much of it is just not having, you know, the players on the court to be able to shoot an efficient shot like a 3-pointer?
I think it's 100% because of the natural skills of our basketball players. I think Monty, the basketball players out there do not have the skills that allow you to get clean three-point shots. So Monty goes towards their strengths, which takes them away from that. So what I mean by that is you usually get three-pointers off of two types of plays, either a draw and kick where you drive in, you kick it out to an open three-point shooter, and they make it, or you do a post-up, and either it kicks out to a three-pointer or it kicks out to a guy in the perimeter who swings it for a three-pointer. Sometimes you'll get them in transition too, but those are the two primary half-court ways of getting three-pointers reliably. The Pelicans have no post presence. There's nobody that they pass it into who then kicks it out. And their guards, particularly Tyreke Evans and Eric Gordon, when they drive, they do not kick, or they very rarely kick. So, but Eric Gordon and Tyreke Evans, that's what you want them to do. You want them to drive because that's when they're most effective. So unless you have Drew Holiday doing the drive, he sometimes find guys on the perimeter, you're not going to do it. I mean, Ryan Anderson, the way he gets his three-pointers is kind of abnormal for most teams, where he just kind of runs to the pick and pop, flares out there, and can catch and shoot so fast that it doesn't matter if somebody's tracking him. That's one of his innate skills. So, I mean, it's kind of both. Monty is telling these guys to do what they're best at, which eliminates the open three-pointer in most situations, because what they're best at, they don't know how to generate that kind of shot. Yeah. Do you disagree?
No, I mean, I agree. And you know, even if you do drive and kick to Eric Gordon, it's such a slow shot, and he's been taking more of them lately. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, he's not a guy. I mean, Ryan Anderson could just, and this is what I've been saying, is that we don't have anybody who could just rise up over a guy who's contesting. And then you even talk about transition threes. I mean, all of a sudden, we're starting to see this team slowly fall back down after being in the teens and even creeping up into the top 10 in pace. This team is now back down to 20, and yep. And it's going to fall more from there, I can guarantee you. So, I just read all the time from people on Twitter and comments that, you know, Monty's drawing up these 17 foot jump shots, and I don't find myself thinking that Monty Williams is the best coach in the world. I'm not, you know, jumping on the fire and bandwagon now because I don't see how that does any good for this season. I would evaluate him at the end and see what other options are out there. But I don't know what you do if another coach comes in. Maybe you could play at just a completely uncontrollable pace and just play completely chaotic, somewhat like how Houston messed around last year and played with smoke and mirrors. But, you know, I don't think with this roster, with this talent, that you could come up with any scheme that would be sustainable that would allow you to get a decent number of three-pointers without Ryan Anderson on the team.
That's true. Yeah. And, I mean, like I said, it's all got to be that core four, finishing five, whatever set you want to pull. That's the only way you're going to be able to have an excellent, sustainable offense. And even then, your defensive questions are going to come in. I'm feeling the same way about Monty now. I mean, there are things I don't like what Monty does. I don't see that Monty is having, like, an amazing impact. Like I look at his team, and we've kind of got one of our answers to one of the questions I had at the beginning of the year, which is what happens when you take three of the best guards from three absolutely awful teams? And the reality is most teams in the league that are just absolutely awful are awful because they're defensive non-entities. I mean, Sacramento, year after year, they keep having decent offensive seasons, but they are the worst defensive team in the league year after year after year, unless Charlotte's challenging them for that title. And most teams, like even Philadelphia, which had been a good defensive team when they fell apart the last year Drew was there, their defense fell apart, and that made their offense unsustainably bad. So we know now what happens when you take three guards from teams that have no clue how to play defense. You get a team that has no clue how to play defense. And, yeah, they're all good offensive guards, so your offense will start catapulting to the higher levels. But your defense is going to be terrible, and I don't know how you can fix that unless those guards are just had been in a really awful situation. But I don't think – I mean, Eric Gordon and Tyreke Evans, I'm not sure that their defensive IQ is going to change much. Just – I don't see it. And – there's got to be some changes, but we've been saying that for weeks now.
Yeah.
Is there anything, but let's like actually do this. There's the four games. Anything in particular in any of those four games you wanted to pick out and talk about?
Oh God.
You want to talk about Austin Rivers having the crap fouled out of him on the last play of the game?
I guess we could start there because it might make us feel a little bit better to talk about how we were wronged as opposed to the miserable things that just exist within this team that have nothing to do with the ref. So yeah, for those who didn't see it, because I know that was the night after the Saints game and people might have been out doing something else or just out cold after the game. Pelicans are down by three. I thought it was really interesting reading Austin's comments about it afterwards. Basically, the Pelicans don't have a timeout. Dallas makes two free throws to put them up three. And Anthony Davis inbounds the ball to Austin Rivers, who was then supposed to give it up to Brian Roberts. And Rivers and AD were both going to kind of pick each other's man and flare out. And Roberts would have the option of kicking it to either one of those two for three, which I thought was pretty cool because, I mean, if we saw, I forget if it was the game earlier or two games earlier, we did see an Anthony Davis corner three-pointer. So we're getting there. But
yep.
Anyway, Austin Rivers can't get the ball to Roberts. Everything kind of you know, just mashes up. There's nothing that he can do. So he goes to rise up for three, and he's just blatantly held down as he goes to take the shot. Fouled egregiously. No whistle. Refs just shrug their shoulders and walk off. And a day later, the NBA issues a statement that it should have been a foul, and Austin Rivers should have three free throws with 0.6 seconds left, as if that does absolutely anything. So that's kind of the overall recap of it. What were some of your initial thoughts and thoughts after reflecting a little bit later?
Well, I kind of jumped on my seat and screamed, "That's a foul!" And my friend who's sitting there next to me, who, like, I've mentioned him before, he doesn't watch a lot of Pelicans games or know a whole lot about Austin Rivers because he's more of a CP3 fan than anything else. And he goes, "Well, what does Austin Rivers shoot from the free throw line?" And I told him, and he said, "Yeah, they would have lost anyways."
Yeah, I've seen plenty of people make that comment, but I don't think that matters. What?
Yeah, at least give him. He should have had the chance. I mean, there isn't any way you can look at that. I mean, Ellis grabs him, and as Austin tries to go for the shot, stiff arms him directly down on both of his arms. There's nothing there that any ref with even like an eye in the area should have seen that as a foul. So, whatever. It was frustrating. That whole game just had some weird moments in it. And I thought for a second there, Anthony Davis started to take things over in the middle, but only when the ball actually reached his hands. So I've been hesitant to say get the ball to Anthony Davis and let it run through him, because he's still really not polished as an offensive player. But at this point, would you prefer that they just say, you know what, give the ball to Anthony Davis and let him take his lumps?
Yeah, I mean, if it's pick and pops, definitely pick and rolls. I mean, I don't see the harm in throwing the ball up towards the rim and, you know.
Well, no, I mean, like, give him the ball at the elbow and see what he does. Put him in the Dirk post-up triple threat position.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about right now. I mean, there's 46 games to go. I don't know if you want to send the message that would probably send to your team with 46 games left to go. Once we start getting into March, yeah, I would absolutely love that. But first, I mean, we said we were talking about the Rivers foul, and we did, but then moved on. It seems like the number one thing that people are mad about, and if you watch the replay of it, immediately after it happens, Monty Williams just kind of looks at Rivers and the ref, gives a little nod, walks off, and shakes Carlisle's hand and seems perfectly composed. Do you see anything wrong with Monty Williams not flipping out right there or not, you know, basically berating the ref, causing a scene, whatever? I mean, do you feel that there's anything to criticize there for Monty just kind of shrugging his shoulders, walking off, and making kind of a passive comment in the post-game interview as opposed to ranting and raving?
Yes, actually I do. I don't think he should sit in the post game and rant and rave. I think that would be stupid. And it's not even you don't see Popovich very often going into post games and ranting and raving. He'll make one comment and move on. But Popovich would be on the court telling that referee exactly what he thought. Most good, I mean, Thibodeau would be doing it. I can't think of a good coach. I mean, Jackson would be giving him a piece of his mind. And I'm having real trouble thinking of really good coaches all of a sudden, which is kind of silly. I mean, the only coach I can think of who probably wouldn't be out there giving his piece of his mind, who I think is a fairly good coach, is Spoelstra in Miami. And that's because his personality, I mean, LeBron James overwhelms the entire personality there. I mean, Carlisle would be out there in a second. And you don't have to go out there and cause a scene and throw a chair, but don't, I mean, if you don't go out there and tell the ref what you think of that, then your team looks at you and sees that. You're like, all right, well, he takes it. Well, if you see that over and over again, don't you feel like, well, why should I stick my neck out and try to go after guys anymore? I mean, it's kind of, I'm not saying that him doing it is going to make people decide to lie down, but if you see it over and over and over again, it does kind of give that feeling. So, yes, I have a problem with Monty not at least going out there and saying something with a scowl on his face. Got to have the scowl.
Yeah, I go back and forth. I guess my initial instinct was actually the exact opposite. I mean, I don't see any point in ranting and raving to those refs, because you're probably not going to see those specific refs for another 20 games. I would more rant and rave in the press. I would talk to Mr. Benson and Loomis first. I would ask them if they were going to cover my fine, and if they said yes, I would just go off in the post-game press conference, because that, you know, gets the attention of the league and everybody, as opposed to just this set of refs that I'm not going to see again but 2-3 times a year. So that's my initial instinct. But after that, I think it has to be a bigger, big picture plan. Here's my plan. You hire one guy whose role it is to be that, because, you know, Monty Williams, by the look of his suits, he doesn't have much money to throw away on,
wow,
on fines to the league. And I'm sure he wants to stay on the court to continue coaching his team. You just go out and you hire one guy whose sole job is to intimidate the other refs, maybe get kicked out from time to time, throw a chair Bobby Knight style, get in their face, and he plays that role. This guy recently retired from the league. Do you have any idea who I would hire in this position?
He recently retired?
Yes, he did.
No, then I don't have any idea.
Rasheed Wallace. Tell me that if you hire Rasheed Wallace for that role and that role only, that doesn't lock everybody. Just let the other coaches coach. That's Rasheed's job. Monty gets to save the money for his suits, and everybody's happy. But, I mean, in all seriousness, like, it's borderline ridiculous, and it's even kind of funny how I've only seen the league issue two of these statements so far this year, and they've both been on game-ending plays in which the Dallas Mavericks were involved and got away with the foul.
And got the benefit of it.
Yeah, the Kevin Love the one before. But, I mean, it doesn't help at all. But, yeah, I go back and forth on Monty and should he be more demonstrative. I'm actually surprised you brought up Phil Jackson, because I think Phil Jackson is the closest thing to Monty Williams. Like, when I read all the Monty Williams critiques, oh, he just kind of sits around and has a blank stare when the other team's on a run, or he doesn't call a timeout when the other team's on a run, or he doesn't get off the bench to yell at the officials enough. Like, to me, that is Phil Jackson to a T. So I actually think they're the most similar, at least, you know, Phil in his LA days.
Now, Phil would pick spots. That was when maybe in his LA days, and I hated the Shaq Lakers, Shaq Kobe Lakers. I couldn't stand them, so I didn't watch a lot of that. But I caught a lot of Bulls games because I lived near Chicago, and Phil would pick his spots. Like, when he thought that refs were against his team, he would go out there and just go at a ref and purposely pick up a T at times. Have you yet to see Monty ever purposely pick up a T?
No,
I think he only has one technical, doesn't he? I mean, that's what it feels like.
The most I ever seen Monty yell in a game was last year at Utah, and it was at Eric Gordon,
right?
Not at a ref. So, yeah, I think, I don't know. It's just, I guess I don't want to get into you know, the psychology of it, or, you know, tend to believe that any coach has to, I mean, obviously different coaches coach completely different ways. If there was one absolute formula for how you should do it and be effective, that's how everybody would be doing it. But I do kind of agree. I mean, if I'm Austin Rivers there laying on the ground complaining to the ref, and I see my coach completely calm, my first question is going to be, does he care? Does he even care if we win this game or not? You know, or especially with a franchise that's not really been trying to win games the last 2 years, are we doing this again? And then, yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to get passionate about it if I don't feel my coaches. So, you know, I mean, I think we could sit here and pick apart everybody. When a team is playing poorly, everybody could be picked apart more, you know, especially the coaches. But I don't know if, you know, if that's my biggest problem with Monty, but it's definitely something that I think the fan base being so passionate and angry specifically about this season, I think you want to see a coach, you know, angry right along with you, and people aren't getting that from Monty, and I think that's adding even more fuel to the fire.
Yeah, poor Monty.
So,
or maybe not poor Monty. He gets paid a lot of money to do this. So
I mean, obviously devastating news. I mean, I don't know how anybody on the podcast listening to this podcast wouldn't know it, but Ryan Anderson out indefinitely, herniated disc. Drew Holiday out with a fractured tibia. I guess let me go on this timeline. Boston, it's halftime in Boston. We're two games under 500, about to be one game under 500. Pelicans are winning by, I forget if it was like 6 or 8 points. What at that point, what percentage would you have were you thinking that the Pelicans would make the playoffs? What chance would you give them?
At that point, the only major injury we had left was Jason Smith, and he was due back any day. At that point, I was probably thinking about 35 to 40% chance.
Okay, then he gets hurt. They lose a game at Indiana and Miami, which was completely expected anyway. Then the news comes out that he's out indefinitely with a herniated disc, an injury that probably is anywhere between 4 weeks and the end of the year. Where was your percentage at when you got that news? I think it was the day after the podcast we did the last podcast.
Five.
And then just a couple days later, right before the Washington game, we hear no Drew Holiday. He's out with an injury that's usually 4 to 8 weeks.
One.
I don't know which one was more devastating to you. For whatever reason, it was devastating, whether it was short term or long term. Which injury hits you harder?
Well, let me actually answer that question two different ways. Clearly, the Anderson one was the one that made me think that the team was going to. I think that was the irrecoverable one. And for me personally, you know how much I love the three-point shot. So losing Ryan Anderson made my joy for watching Pelicans game, you know, drop a good 30% itself. But as far as like my feeling for the future of this team and how it's going to proceed through the next few years, the one that hit me harder was Drew Holiday. Because I can see a future where Ryan Anderson isn't here in the near future. I cannot see a future where Drew Holiday and Anthony Davis aren't a major tandem going forward. So I absolutely want and need to have Drew and Anthony playing next to each other these couple years as much as possible, learning each other, understanding how each other works so that they can be that core, and whatever pieces fit in around them. So Drew going down, you know, it hurts in a different way.
Yeah, although I will say, I mean, if you do think one guy might not be part of the core and is more likely to be traded, I mean, I read an article like 2 days after Ryan Anderson's injury was diagnosed, It was actually the Utah Jazz True Hoop Network. They were talking about what to do with their expirings, and they were saying something like they could give us Beadrins and take Ryan Anderson off our hands if we threw in a future draft pick. Like, if you're saying that Ryan Anderson is a guy that could be gone, wouldn't it be more devastating that a guy that you might eventually trade for a better guy or a better fit down the line? I mean, doesn't it hurt more that he, you know, he got injured and...
No. No, and honestly, I mean, anyone who thinks that suddenly they're going to get Ryan Anderson, take them off our hands, is living in a pipe dream. I mean, that's just, that's beyond dumb. I'm sorry, True Hoop guys and Salt Lake, but you're right. That is Homerism pipe dream crack. Hood. That's like the people who kept writing all last year, we could trade Eric Gordon for Paul George, as if they could have done that at any point. Eric Gordon's value was always lower than Paul George, probably before Paul George played an actual basketball game, because Eric Gordon was already injured.
Yeah. No, but I mean, yeah, the Anderson one, I mean, first of all, even if this team is 100% healthy, we're in agreement that this team has no shot at the playoffs without Ryan Anderson, right? If they're 100% healthy outside of Ryan Anderson.
As of right now?
Let's say you start the season over again and, you know, it's 0-0, 82 games left, and I tell you that you're not going to really have any injury problems, but Ryan Anderson's going to miss the season. You think this is a team that's capable of making the playoffs with this roster minus Ryan Anderson?
I think things could break right and they could squeak in, yeah. But it wouldn't be easy, and it would take other teams to have injuries themselves.
I mean, right now their record is 3-11 with Ryan Anderson.
Yeah.
It's not losses to...
You mean without Ryan Anderson.
Right, without Ryan Anderson. It's not like exactly like they had losses to world beaters. I mean, we're talking about Lakers, Jazz, you know, Magic.
Yeah, I know.
So I think that's the one that pretty much guarantees that, you know, there was no shot at a playoffs. And then the Jrue Holiday one, I mean,
insult to injury?
Maybe, and I don't really feel like getting into this now 46 games out. But I don't know about you. I mean, I guess I'll ask you, after you hear that the Jrue Holiday injury, how long did it take you to go to the NBA standings and see how far we were outside of, you know, the five worst records in the league?
Honestly, I did not look at all, and I refuse to look because I think it's a fool's game because, I mean, even if you're a top four team, you're likely slot. I mean, unless you're number one or two, which we're not getting, your likely slot is six or higher, which means unless this team just loses out, which is not happening, they're not going to get their draft pick this year.
If they win at the same exact percentage that they have won with Ryan Anderson, if Ryan Anderson's been out, if they win at that same exact percentage for the rest of the year,
mm-hmm.
they finish with 25 wins. And on average, that gives you the fourth most ping pong balls. I mean,
just stop it. Stop it. It's too early.
Oh, wait.
Don't do that.
I agree, but I don't know. I mean, what else are you, if I tell you Ryan Anderson is out for the year and Jrue Holiday is out until after the All-Star break, What are we doing for the next couple weeks? Like, what?
Losing a lot.
What are you even interested in watching?
I'm interested in watching Anthony Davis continue to play the way he has been.
Right, with five guys in the paint every time he.
I'm also interested in watching Eric Gordon raise his trade value as he continues to be the focal point of this offense.
Yeah. I mean, I'm right on board. I want some Rivers and Withy time.
Yeah, I want to see some Darius Miller, see if he can go four or five from deep any more games.
Yeah, but really, I mean, how many wins are you expect? I don't think it's a fool's game, at least not yet. I think we look up halfway through the season and this team is going to either be 16-25 or 15-26. If Anderson misses the rest of the season, which I personally think he will, because even when he possibly could come back, I think this team is something like 18-40. I wouldn't see the point in bringing him back. I would just rather him continue to rehab and get the surgery for something like that. I don't know. I don't think it's a fool's game. I think right now, if you tell me Ryan Anderson is out for the year, I think I would bet on the Pelicans winning less than 30 games.
I think that this is an unusual year. I don't think you're going to be able to out-tank certain teams. So I just don't think there's really going to be much of a chance that you're going to be able to keep your pick. So I don't see any reason to really entertain it. Just try to win what you can. If I had told you at the beginning of the year that in a game this season, Monty would be juggling his rotations and players coming in and out to keep Darius Miller on the floor in the fourth quarter of a close game, would you have assumed injuries or an amazing leap forward for Darius Miller?
Oh, definitely injuries. Because, I mean, you know,
he was really juggling in that game to keep him on. I mean, he was putting Aminu in and then taking him out like 30 seconds later so he could. It was a riot.
And I mean, this is how desperate we've become. And Darius Miller probably fits that description better than anybody of a guy who could get his 3-point shot off and even get it off when he's somewhat contested.
Yeah. Big guy.
So, I mean, you're reaching for straws at this point. And I thought, you know, again, it's one of those things where people are just upset and they'll pick on Monty for every little thing. But coming down the stretch in that last Dallas game, you know, he drew up two really nice plays. One would have got Anthony Davis a dunk if Dallas didn't basically tackle him and send him to the free throw line. The other got Darius Miller an open three that put him within one with 11 seconds left. So I thought some nice work when you're dealing with that little talent. Nice work to get two really good looks out of timeouts at the end of the game to give the Pelicans a chance there before, you know, before the refs come and took it from them.
Yeah, I mean, Monty somehow has a reputation of being a defensive coach. I don't know how that's ever been possible. I mean, he's always been an offensive coach in my mind. I mean, he comes from when he was actually a coach with San Antonio. That was when San Antonio was on its most skewed offensively towards the offensive side of the ball. And he went to Portland, which has been offensive primarily for years. When Nate McMillan there, yeah, the other teams didn't score a lot of points, but that's because they were slow, but they scored a lot in those minutes that they, you know, on those possessions. So the one thing I would be most interested in, this is just more curiosity than I think the guy might even drive me nuts if he was the actual coach of this team, but let's say Thibodeau and Chicago part ways. If you gave Thibodeau the exact same roster that you gave Monty, do you think he turns this into a good defense, or do you think that's not possible?
Good. So like somewhere between 1-15.
Yes.
I would say, I wish I could check on one thing, but my gut tells me no, because how was that Boston defense before they got veterans in there?
Not good.
Right. So, I mean, people don't want to hear about basketball IQ, and it's so much easier to blame the coach, but, you know, I thought one of the best interviews was after the first Dallas loss with Austin Rivers, and he seems so frustrated. If you watch the video, And he just kept saying time after time that the coaches are telling them what to do, and they understand it in practice, and they go over it, and they go over it at halftime, they go over it on video over and over and over again. But at the end of the day, when it comes down to make that split second decision, that's not even really a decision. You just have to do it based on instinct. They're not trusting each other. They're not making the right rotations. They're not communicating. That's, I mean, I don't think Tom Thibodeau tells them anything than different than what Monty does. I think it's a young guy thing, and you know, a lack of trust and a lack of being on the court together. I mean, what did you say? The best players played like 90 minutes so far together this year. It's a combination of a bunch of things, but no, I think Tom Thibodeau, I think his principles really work well with veteran players. I don't think he comes in and really changes much.
Okay. Yeah, I would be, just as a pure curiosity, I would be interested to see what would happen. But you're right, I don't actually expect anything good to happen. Like, there are very few coaches that I can, like, sit here and think that, oh, that guy would have a major impact on the team. The only one I can think of that I actually feel could turn this into a team that is outperforming its outperforming its talent. There's probably two of them, and you're not getting either of them because they're in Dallas and San Antonio.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't think Monty is the solution. I don't think he's the perfect guy. But you know, for those just screaming to fire him, and then everything will be magically fixed. I don't believe that's the case. I thought the offense was very innovative and imaginative and good when it had. I mean, Ryan Anderson is not the best player on this team, but he's the most important to the offense. And you could go ahead and question whether that's something that Dell should be blamed for, but I don't think you could build a roster assuming injuries. I mean, maybe you could build a roster assuming a guy like Eric Gordon gets injured because of his previous history, and ironically, of course, he's been the most healthy this cursed season. But I don't think that you could go and build a roster assuming injuries are going to happen. I think that Monty did a very good job with the roster that Dell built that he assumed he was going to have for this season. And you pull Ryan Anderson out of that equation. I can't really, maybe you could help me with this. I can't really think of a basketball comparison of, you know, who that would be the equivalent of pulling out of another team. I mean, again, he's not the best player on the team, but I think he's the most important offensive player as far as what he provides and the one thing that he could do. Can you think of any teams that have a player that's similar to Ryan Anderson and what he does for the Pelicans?
Huh. Now I got to rattle through the teams in my head.
I mean, I would think maybe like I'm trying to think of low post players that the offense is.
Yeah, I mean, I've thought it's been of Zach Randolph and LaMarcus Aldridge, but they're arguably the better players on their team. It's got to be somebody who's just a little bit underrated. And you know, I mean, Paul Pierce used to be that for Boston. Like, they, you know, Kevin Garnett at one point was felt to be better. Rajon Rondo was better at the time. And Pierce was just, like, the glue that made everything, like, actually run and function there. But I'm having a hard time thinking. Manu Ginobili used to be that in San Antonio. Where, you know, it was him coming on the floor that actually swung games the way it needed to. Where it was Tony and Duncan just put the game in reach, and then he would come in and make it.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that comparison before they got some of these, you know, before they got Kawhi and Danny Green.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of something right now, though, and no, it's not really click. Millsap in Atlanta?
I mean, I don't know how he, you know, makes the game so much easier for everybody. I mean, that's the thing with Ryan Anderson is it's not his three ball as much as he makes the game so much easier for everybody else on the court. That's why I'm saying I'm trying to think of low post players, because growing up in the 90s, that's what players always used to say. You know, low post players that make the game just so much easier for them. And Ryan Anderson definitely does that for all the other Pelicans players. And without him, I mean, I would just challenge people if they have the game on a DVR to just pause the game occasionally when the Pelicans are on offense, and just look at the number of defenders who have at least 1 foot in the paint. There's just absolutely no reason to respect this team otherwise. And I think it's an absolutely devastating loss. And unlike some other examples, I mean, when the Pistons lost, or sorry, when the Celtics lost Pierce, they could at least turn around and lock teams down on the defensive end and maybe win games 80-78. This team has no prayer of doing that. So I think you're looking at a bottom 10 offense and a bottom 5 defense right now.
Well, at the moment. I would say that if Ryan Anderson wasn't on the team at all, they went into the season and the core four were Gordon, Evans, Holiday, and Anthony Davis, I wouldn't say that this was a bottom 10 offense.
Well, no.
I'd be willing to bet that they could be a league average offense.
But I can't talk about some alternative reality in which our guys stay healthy.
That's true.
I could only talk about today. And today.
Yeah, today, bottom 10, no question.
Bottom 10 offense, without a doubt.
I mean, come on, they're playing Rivers, Achinka, and Aminu. When Jason Smith started the Dallas game, this last Dallas game, I've never been more relieved in my life. I'm like, hey, somebody who can make a jump shot.
Yeah.
We don't have any of those guys.
He's a guy that, and I don't feel sorry for any athletes who make millions of dollars, but I feel sorry for him relatively in the fact that, you know, I mean, he's playing so far outside of his role right now and what he should be doing. And, you know, you got to feel bad for him in some ways. And especially when the refs are giving him phantom six foul calls when he doesn't even touch Dirk, and Dirk winds up getting 3 free throws.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody's just playing out of position. Brian Roberts is a guy that should be fighting for a roster spot in the NBA, and he's a starting point guard right now. Al-Farouq Aminu's probably a 7th, 8th, 9th man. He's starting. Ajinka started games. I mean, really the only guy that's in position is Anthony Davis. I don't even think that Eric Gordon is a primary creator and scorer on a good team. So now he's out of position. Like I said, I can't find 3 teams in the NBA right now that I think the Pelicans should be favored over, regardless of where the game's being.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's get off this depressing thing. I know you listen and read Bill Simmons. I did as well. He had his second Birdmeister. You guys can go figure out what that is. I'm not going to get into it. But he did briefly talk about the Pelicans, and that was before the rash of injuries. Really, I guess Anderson was hurt then, but he didn't know the extent of it.
Right.
So they did have they do they he loves his little trade machine things, and I was, which is surprising because I like the guy, but I was pretty against a proposed trade in that. I want to see what you think, if I'm just being stupid about this. So they had a trade in there that essentially Anderson leaves, Pekovic comes in. It involves Houston, but who cares what happens to Houston in that situation? So would you like that? Would you like to have a bruising enforcer like Pekovic next? Do you think that would make a big difference?
If he was also a defensive player, yeah. But he's not.
Right.
So,
but he's a good rebounder, which we desperately need right now.
Yeah, but I mean, again, you're talking about more offense that he's going to be able to provide more offense, and I don't really worry about that long term. I mean, if I'm going to move Ryan Anderson, I guess it would be either an enormous upgrade on offense, like I would do it as part of a package for Kevin Love, or I would do it in order to vastly improve the defense and hopefully not make the offense that much worse. So, no, I mean, it wouldn't be something that I would seek out, you know, even though, I mean, it would be a lot of fun offensively, and you would kind of change the identity of this team on that end. I don't see that as something that would interest me long term. I still believe he puts on another 15 pounds over the summer. I still think we're eventually going to see this guy as the team's center. So I don't really see much of a need for that.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I know that I have like a blind spot where Ryan Anderson is, where I just want him on my team because he supplies the things that I love. So every trade I've heard that involves Ryan Anderson that didn't also involve Kevin Love, I've thought was ridiculous. I've hated them all. And the only reason why I like the Kevin Love one is because clearly he is super Ryan Anderson. So, I mean, I have a blind spot. So I just wanted to get somebody else's take on that trade and what they thought.
Yeah.
I mean, Pekovic is averaging 18-9 this season. He's got a PER of 20.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it depends on what you see Anthony Davis's future is. And I still clearly see it as, you know, more of a center with spacers around him. I mean, you watch the finals, you watch the teams that struggle in the playoffs, the teams that do well, they do well with more spacing and going smaller. And then teams like Memphis eventually get exposed and utterly beat down in the playoffs. So I guess I'm always going to pick the poison that results in Anthony Davis being the center and me learning to play around that. I'm more interested in seeing this Pelicans team when they have a legitimate offensive weapon at the three, Rhino at the four, and Anthony Davis at the five. Once we see that, I don't think people will ever question again how this team should be built. But, you know, people see Ryan Anderson struggle from time to time because other teams put wings on him. And once that stops and we truly see the spacing that's possible with a team that has Ryan Anderson, Anthony Davis, and a legitimate small forward, I think people will wonder why we ever even considered moving Ryan Anderson for a quote-unquote center.
Yeah. All right, so there's three games coming up this week. San Antonio, Houston, Golden State, they're all at home. You don't think we can beat anybody right now with this roster?
No.
Any chance we steal one from somebody?
All right.
If you had to pick one, let's play this game, because that way we don't have to get all depressed and say, these guys are going to kick our butt, these guys are going to... You have to pick one team here to steal a game from. Who do you think is most likely you could steal a game from?
All right, so Manu will probably be out, so that would be my case for that one. Houston, I've already seen them get really cold. Golden State, I would probably say San Antonio.
Wow, okay.
Only because that's the only one that I could see. I think if the Pelicans are going to win, they're going to have to play a game that was similar, like it's similar to the first half of the game that they played at Dallas.
Okay.
Just ugly, where the other team shoots 25%, they're not hitting that night, or they're not into it. You know, they're playing a terrible team, so they're not really fully into the game, and, you know, maybe you could steal it late. I don't think you could hold Houston down that long. Same with Golden State now that Iguodala is back. If you were to tell me one of those teams just has a night where they, you know, they don't show up, they shoot 28% to 32%. I would pick San Antonio, even though I think that's a very small percent. That's the only one that I could see it even being possible.
I would not have picked San Antonio. I would have actually picked Houston for the same reason you were just saying. I think it's more likely that Tyreek will be back for Houston than they will be for San Antonio. So that helps us there. And I think that this particular Houston team will, we talked about it before, they're going to go to Dwight Howard in the post because they think Dwight Howard can kill everybody, which is going to break up how they play a little bit. They're not going to be going to their strengths. And this team has already proven this year it can go dead cold from downtown. And James Harden at times will become disinterested and play down to his competition.
Right, but they'll still get to the free throw line, which I don't think San Antonio necessarily will. That's, to me, the difference. Yeah. Both teams could go cold. I think on a night where Houston goes cold, you'll still see Harden at the free throw line 18 times.
I mean, it's possible.
That's
Harden's interested because Harden has had some games this season where he's just kind of like, meh.
Yeah.
And maybe he's going to look at the Pelicans and say, there's nothing there to worry about anymore.
And another thing you brought up, Tyreek Evans could be back by then. Give me a grade with this specific team, Ryan Anderson and Drew Holiday out. Give me a grade from 1 to 100 on how good you think the Pelicans are with Tyreek, again, with those two out, and without Tyreek. How big of a difference does Tyreek make if Ryan Anderson and Drew Holiday are not playing? 1 to 100 with Tyreek, without Tyreek.
So 1 to 100, I'm confused by your grading scale. But if I had to use a letter grade.
Fine, go ahead.
I would say he takes the team from D to a C minus.
See, I don't see it that way. The things that he does well. I mean, basically, you're begging for a guy to come back that can't make a shot outside of the paint. Literally the worst shooter in the NBA outside of the paint.
Yeah, and but he drives continuously.
Yeah, and you're asking him to drive into the paint against five defenders. I mean, teams are seriously, they're guarding this team. I don't know if people remember this series, but I think it was the 2007 finals, LeBron versus the Spurs.
Right.
I mean, that's how teams are guarding us every night. And now, you know, you're dying for a guy to come back from ankle injury who can't shoot outside of the paint in order to just drive it recklessly into teams that have five guys standing in there.
I'm not dying. I'm just saying he will improve.
I don't think he really does.
I think
not that I think Tyreek is a fantastic player, third or fourth best player on this team. I thought he was having a great stretch there, especially when Gordon went out. I just, the way that this team is and the way that his game is built, I think that when he comes back, he's going to start putting up some atrocious numbers and people will start questioning the signing/trade again. But, you know, it'll just be because it's an absolutely terrible fit. I couldn't think of a worse player to put into a situation in which the other team is just packing the paint. I don't see how he affects the game at all with Ryan Anderson and Drew Holiday not on the team.
Have you forgotten the one man Tyreek Evans break?
Okay. But I mean, that'll be once in a while. Again, look at our pace. Our pace is way.
That's right. He's going to elevate it. He's going to be like shock paddle to the heart.
We're not getting any stop, so I don't know how he's going to get out on the break. All right,
Mr. Negative Nancy.
I think he brings us from a D- to a D, maybe. I mean, relative. I'm not trying to be, but I mean, relative to the other 30 teams. This team would be a D minus if they're one of the three worst teams in the league, right?
Yeah.
So I think maybe he brings you from a D minus to a D. I still don't think you're even close to those teams. The Memphis team that I think is a great matchup comes after that. I think that's another. I mean, you'll see. You think it's too early now. We will be discussing the top, you know, keeping our pick possibility, I'd say 2-3 podcasts from now, and we'll be discussing it seriously.
All right, if you say so. So your prediction for the week is 0-3, I'm assuming.
0-3, but no new injuries to report on the next podcast.
Come on.
That's my optimism.
Talk about being unrealistic. You know something's going to happen. Someone's going to walk under a ladder and a brick's going to fall on their head or something. So I'm going 1-3. I'm going to play the field that, you know, even the worst NBA teams usually have like a winning percentage of you know, 30% or so. So they're going to manage to pick off one of these teams somehow.
Right.
1-2. 1-2.
Oh.
All right. Thanks for everybody listening for listening to our awesome, awesome, happy, happy, joy, joy podcast. And we will be back later next week with covering the 3-0 week that's bound to happen
for the other team.